Welcome everybody. Who do we have so far? Let's see, Nadine, Rhonda, Theo, Christian, welcome. Good to see you guys here. Just getting a couple things set up and we're going to get started here in about a minute. How is everybody doing today? Curious what things are looking like in your end. We just had some fun weather out here in the Atlanta area. So we're supposed to get some severe thunderstorms and even possibly some tornadoes, but fortunately tornadoes missed us. So it's springtime. the sun finally came out, which is a nice thing. All right. I think we're pretty much set here. So, hey, again, welcome. Everyone's great to have you here. You know, it's I can't believe it, but this is our last coaching call, our last Q&A call here in the program. And time has flown. It's weird. I look back and I think about Christmas, and that feels like a while back. But then I think about when we started this work together here in January, that doesn't seem like that long ago, but we're here. And as usual, we'd like to go ahead and get started on a positive note and just would love to go around the room and hear what's new and good in your world. Now, remember, a win doesn't have to be anything monumental. It could be the fact that you're making progress, that you are have updated your LinkedIn profile, that you sent out 3 warm emails last week. You know, anything along those lines that's sparking some positive momentum, something that you feel good about, that's really the litmus test right there. We'd love to hear about it. Just type in W in the chat area. Let us know what's new and good in your world. And I see we got Susan here as well. Hey, Susan.
Hey there. Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome. My goodness. In the middle of March already, too. My goodness.
I'll tell you, I'll kick things off here, too, with this. It's kind of in the wind. I guess I could call it a win. So I just finished reading, and I love these kinds of books because it's so easy to kind of stray from this. Finished reading a book by Steven Pinker called Enlightenment Now. And it's a massive, it's huge, it's thick. It's got over 100 charts and graphs, just showing how good we have it today. And if you were to pick any time in history to be born in, it would be now. And I know that might be hard to believe because, I mean, if you watch the news or you read news stories, like, oh my goodness, the world is falling apart. And he makes an amazing case for why we have it so good. And I tell you, just reading that has really shifted my thinking. And I'm just walking around the house, opening the refrigerator and saying thank you, you know, to myself, because that would be weird to say it out loud, but it just turning up the heat, you know, at night. I turn the key, my ignition, and it's like, wow, I have transportation here. I don't even have to think about whether or not it's going to start. It starts. It's pretty amazing. And anyway, so that's been my win. It's just the fact that it's kind of amped up my gratitude. All right, we got a couple wins here. Theo says, I got paid by my first client this morning. Congratulations. Wow, that's awesome. So that's the second thing, right? It's like when you land that first client, it's huge. And then when you get paid, that's like the next big milestone. So congratulations, Theo. That's wonderful. All right. Who else? Again, guys, it doesn't have to be anything revolutionary, just something that you feel good about, personal or professional life. Lauren says, finished website in session 4. Awesome. Hey, that's a big step, Lawrence. It's the hardest thing you'll ever write is stuff about yourself. So the fact that you did that, that's fantastic. Good job. Nadine says, after needing to take six months hiatus with a course, I'm back. Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad to have you back. All right. So let us know what you guys are working on right now. Would love to hear from each and every one of you in terms of what your focus is. So type in an I for implementation, what you're implementing from the program right now. What's your focus? I mean, are you, you know, like Lawrence just finishes his website. So Lawrence, what are you moving on to next? Session 5, right? I hope, is that your focus right now? Are you working on prospecting? Are you talking to a couple of prospects? Are you working on a client project? Are you still trying to finalize your positioning? Whatever it might be, no shame. Just let us know in the chat area. Theo says, sending out more warm emails and updating my LinkedIn. Wonderful. Good stuff. And you know, that's the way it usually is. I mean, you put something out there and you come back and you update. And by the way, I mean, Susan can tell you, right? Susan, how many times have you tweaked your headline, your about area? It's,
goodness, yes.
Right? Big time.
Too many, maybe.
Yeah.
I think you just find things that are a better fit. Hold on,
I can't hear you, but now I see why. My earbuds are not connected.
There you go. Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you.
Okay, great. Now I find that over time, as you start working with clients, that changes for the website and LinkedIn. You know, you're just fine tuning. Like, ooh, you know, I think I'd rather be working with this kind of client. Or, geez, the clients I've been targeting, the prospects I've been targeting, this is really their issue. So now I'm seeing that now this is the issue that I should be, the pain that I should be focusing on and speaking to, that kind of thing. So yeah, you're tweaking. It's a matter of tweaking over time.
Totally normal. So just so you know, as you keep moving and you grow and you evolve, perfectly normal to change it. Nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely.
Nadine says, I'm picking off where I left off, reviewing my website copy. I did already update my LinkedIn and put an article up last week. Okay, good. Awesome. Lauren says, I'm in session 5 and ready to prospect. I just got a job from Contently, so this is the last call. I was told by a former student that there's a call that an alumni can chat on. Where is that? Is there any way to contact you after this? Yeah, so I don't know of there's a call that alumni can chat on. Lawrence, I'm not aware of it unless, you know, some alumni from the program have, you know, informally put something together, but I'm not aware of it. So officially we don't really have, you know, kind of an alumni group. And in terms of support, so yes and no. So Susan and I will be here through March 31st in the Facebook group supporting you guys. Okay. So a couple of things, and I was going to mention this later, but I'm glad you went ahead and asked it. make sure that you take stock of where you are, where you might be having obstacles, challenges, questions, and get those to us in the Q&A thread. We're here. We're there every business day, answering questions, providing you with feedback. So even though today is the last coaching call, we will continue, to provide that support through the end of the month. So the second thing about that is, hey, you know, if you need an incentive to go ahead and push through, now is the time, you know, because basically in a couple of weeks, that's when the support ends. So it's, and guys, look, I've done this program since 2012, done it many different ways. I've had, you know, where I've done it for 6 months, for 4 months, 9 weeks. I've experimented with all kinds of approaches. I've been doing this a long time. And here's what I've found. no matter how much time you give someone, and this is just human nature, this is not you, this is not just me, this is all of us, no matter how much time you give someone, the work will expand to the time available. So by creating that constraint, what we're hoping is that you guys, you know, just make sure you got everything buttoned up, and any questions, concerns, any final issues, wherever you need feedback, got to talk something through, you know, we're here through the end of the month. Okay. So after that, we don't offer any additional support. Again, for a couple of reasons. One is just outside of the scope of the program. And also, if we did that, I guarantee you what would happen is, you know, people wouldn't move through this process like they need to. It just doesn't happen. And I'm as guilty as anybody else of doing that. I was in a program last year that it was a whole year. So I was on track until about mid-March. Anyone remember what happened mid-March last year, right? It just like the world fell apart. I lost focus, you know, and things happen. I mean, it wasn't like I just got lazy or anything. It's just one thing led to another. And then early December, I started cranking it up. Actually, it was like mid-November. I started really cranking it up. I was so far behind, and I wanted to make sure I took advantage of, you know, the support that I had. And, you know, fortunately, I made it happen, but it was not the ideal scenario. But, you know, had it been like, well, through 2021 as well because of the pandemic, I guarantee you I wouldn't have done that. I would have probably still been where I was last October, which is basically where I was last March when I left off. So anyway, long answer to a simple question. Just wanted to address it for everybody. Okay. So guys, we're here today. You know, that's the important thing. Let's just focus on right now today. If you got any questions, you need feedback from us, you know what to do. Type in a capital Q in the chat area. And give us an idea of what you got. You don't have to tell us the whole thing because we'll unmute you and we can have a conversation and discuss it. So we're at your disposal. And right now it's an open floor. So don't be shy. You know how it goes. Anything's fair game. While we're waiting for questions, Susan, I haven't asked you about this, but wanted to maybe have a conversation with you about it. So I think it would be helpful for everyone in the group. So I have a couple of additional coaching groups, and one of them is my Elevate program, which is established writers and copywriters who are in the five-figure range. They're trying to break six figures. And, but the bit, you know, these are writers who have been there for a while working with clients. Then I have my boardroom coaching program, which is for established six-figure writers and copywriters and even marketing consultants. And one trend that I've noticed, and this has been going on for the past few months, is that people have been getting progressively busy. And in fact, I would say the biggest problem, especially my boardroom clients have right now, is that they have way too much work. They're facing problems of like burnout, you know, balancing work with personal. I mean, it's pretty bad. You might say, well, nice problem to have. But the reason I mention it is I'm curious what you're seeing out there, Susan. And and also just to let everybody know, guys, it is insane out there. So many companies looking for outside help, many of them not even close to being ready to hire full-time employees. They're trying to do this with independent contractors, with freelancers, because they don't want to take on that kind of responsibility. So just an FYI, depending on where you are, what you might be hearing and the people you're hanging out with, you may not be aware of that reality, but Susan and I are seeing and hearing from a lot of different people out there.
For sure. Yeah. And same here. I mean, who knows what is driving this? I think, you know, we could have a very long discussion about a number of different things that might be driving it, but I see the exact same thing, Ed. I am talked with a colleague of mine who basically said, and he does the same kind of writing that I do. He's booked until January of next year right now. I, in my own business, have seen an uptick, people just reaching out to me. Finding me on LinkedIn. I had a woman find me and book an appointment with me, which I have that all automated on my website. So they can, if they want to book a time with me, they just to do it. And had a delightful conversation. We're going to be working together. And I've had a couple of those people just jumping on my calendar saying, hey, I want to talk about writing. I'm seeing it in my own work in terms of just things picking up, but I have been hearing it from a number of other people. Just what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing is that, I don't know why, it could be a number of factors, but I think that now that we've passed the 1 year point, I think people are shifting their energy is changing. You know, I think people are starting to kind of look out from under the blanket here and say, we got to get back to work. And we got to get back to work right now. And so I agree. I think that there's a demand. And I don't know, Ed, I don't see it as being in any particular industry. I think this seems to be across industries. And I don't know what you've seen in regards to that. But for me, people are coming out of their shells, I think, finally.
I'm seeing it everywhere. And there are very few exceptions. Like I got somebody right now who's trying to transition. We just started working together, trying to transition out of travel, for instance, because she doesn't feel that's going to come back, you know, in a big way anytime soon. So those are exceptions, you know,
right.
But I say that, and I do have someone I'm working with who was in travel, was doing really well. And she's not trying to transition because she's actually overbooked right now. Because she, you know, part of it is luck being at the right place at the right time. She's working with a couple of clients who are doing, it's like travel technology, but they're in very different aspects of travel.
Sure.
And, you know, the dynamics are such that they're investing in their marketing, you know, right now. You're going to find that.
You know, the industries that were most deeply impacted are the ones that have had to really pivot and figure themselves out. I mean, they're in a place where they're like, if we don't want to just disappear, we need to figure out something else. We need to figure out an alternative. I can tell you that I have a good friend, a woman that I graduated from college with. So I've known her a long time. She is a flight attendant, and she's been off for quite some time, as you might imagine, but got called back and is actually back to, I think, a full schedule. And she was doing international flights. She had, you know, risen to the level of international flights. And she's, and it has nothing to do with writing, but if travel, you know, the fact that they need her back, it's an indicator to me that, you know, even the travel industry is probably, will it look the same? And maybe not for a while, but it's certainly here in the US, I know travel is, it's creeping right back up from what I'm seeing.
Absolutely. So anyway, just a little bit of insight, guys, on what we're seeing. All right, Rhonda has a question here. It says, I'm beginning to write my warm emails to friends and families, a list of whom I've finished. I know that next steps are solid prospects and LinkedIn work. This will be ongoing. Should I go and look at session 6? Yes, Rhonda, good question. So it's interesting because after session 5, the dynamics of the training change. And in fact, I'm glad you brought this up because for those of you who are kind of there, just know that it's actually going to get easier in a big way. So here's what I mean. Up to session 5, it was really all about you go through the training and then you got to take some time to implement that. And starting in session 6, it's really more about, hey, go through it and know that it's there and kind of understand, get a lay of the land. But the real application will come when you talk to a real prospect. Okay, so you got to be ready for it. So what I would do is starting in session 6, just kind of run through them. And I would do them as quickly together as you can. So I would do session 6 and 7 on the same day if you can, or maybe, you know, a day apart or something like that, because there's not much to implement. You just have to understand the steps in the process, but don't try to memorize it. I'm telling you, that stuff takes a few tries to really kind of for you to internalize it. So yeah, I would absolutely go into session 6, 7, and then 8. And those, again, because there's not that much to implement, you can go through that stuff quickly. And then those will be sessions that you keep coming back to for review. In fact, I highly encourage that. So you go through, you have a conversation with a prospect. It's not going to be perfect. Let me just tell you that right now. So go easy on yourself and then come back and review that material so you can do a debrief and see, like, you know, what you did well, what you could have done differently, et cetera. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. Glad that that made sense. And I mean, look, I have this same material from session 6 and 7. I teach that to everyone at all levels. I'm working right now with several people who are very accomplished six-figure writers and copywriters who didn't really have a process for that. They were just kind of wing it, or they had something, but it missed a lot of the things that I teach you guys here. So this is stuff that you're going to continue to be able to use. This is not like, all right, let's dumb it down. This is the material that you're going to be able to continue to use. And because you have lifetime access, that's something I forgot to mention. So the coaching support will end here at the end of the month, but you have lifetime access to this material. So don't be shy about coming back to it. Don't put it off, but you'll know that, you know, you're not going to lose it. So you don't have to frantically download it all.
You know, what I see too with this particular, like with 6 and 7, some of the techniques and the system building that you talk about in these two sessions, is that sometimes folks will get a little swept away, especially if you know, Ed and I were talking about things picking up. You may find that you get into it and you start to get busy and you start getting more client work and more clients, and you get distracted, you get pulled away from this, and you literally get swept away with, I got projects, I got, you know, I'm talking to people, I'm getting, maybe you're getting referrals, which is a beautiful thing. And so the quote unquote need for this stuff doesn't feel like it's there. Like, if I really need this. So then that's what, you know, Ed, what you were talking about is some of these people that are up in that six figure range, they've just managed to cobble it together and get by, but as business changes and as the business environment changes, you're going to need to fall back on this. There's never going to be a time when this isn't going to be valuable in terms of understanding how to build systems for yourself and keep in touch with people the right way. I just think that, you know, sometimes business takes off, it might get ahead of us, or we get pulled away and distracted. But the beauty of having access to this for the long term is to be able to come back to it and say, you know what, business has slowed down. Maybe I've pivoted. Maybe who knows what happened. Now I really do need to do this right. Go back and start reaching out to people who I haven't talked to in a year, or contacted in a year or something like that, or 6 months, and do it the right way.
Absolutely. And you know what? One more reason to kind of press through and get to session 8, especially, is that session 8 has got some really good troubleshooting content. Sure. So if you feel like, man, I don't know, it's like I missed the boat somewhere, or it's just not clicking, or I'm not getting the progress that I wanted. Session 8 has got some great troubleshooting stuff. I still say go through 6, 7, and then 8. Don't, you know, I wouldn't skip to 8, but to just know that's there. And in fact, that would be another incentive to do that while you have access to us, so we can help you, you know, if you're going through that. Lawrence has a question here about what to do next. He says, I'm in session 5 and reading about email templates. I have made a list of friends in top 10, but I have a ton of business cards from people I've met over the past few years at conferences and such. These seem like good leads. How do I address people I met years ago? Also, how do I go about going through my LinkedIn contact list? Okay, so why don't I take the first part of this one, Susan, and then you can address the LinkedIn question. Here's the thing. You got business cards, people you met years ago, you know, some of them maybe you met one time and that's it, and there was nothing beyond that. Or maybe you met, had some conversation, back and forth over whatever, a couple, 2-3 months, and then it just kind of fizzled. But in either case, the question is, you know, what do I do with these people? The common denominators, you haven't talked to them in years. And listen, the first thing is, look, that happens. Okay. So don't feel bad about it. The way that I like to think of it is, because this has happened to me, okay? To me, that is an incentive to say, you know what, from now on, I'm going to stay in touch with people, period. And you know, it may not go somewhere. It may not go anywhere, but that's okay. I'm going to make it an effort to stay in touch in something. And I've gone back and forth on this. I'm actually pretty good on it now. I feel like the best time to reach out to people is when you don't need to. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, Brian, been a while. How's it going? You guys doing okay over there in North Carolina, in Raleigh or whatever? Hope business is good. Drop me a line when you can. I'd love to hear what you're up to. Or you can just kind of end with a question, which creates even a little bit more tension, you know, and kind of demands a response, if you will. But very low key. Those kinds of emails are so easy to send. It could be a text. You know, I prefer text if I got the person's cell phone number. I'll do this every other Friday for about half an hour, 45 minutes. It's amazing how many I get out the door. And sure, will it spark some conversation? So it's not just that first half hour, 45 minutes. You know, starting over the weekend or Monday, Tuesday, yeah, I'll have a few of these back and forth, but they don't take that much time. I mean, you know, I don't feel like I need to type in this huge, you know, 8-page paragraph email. In fact, you don't want to do that. People are going to see that and go, whoa, it's a little too much. But anyway, so to me, this is an incentive to get back into that habit. But the question Lawrence really has is, what do I do now? And I'll go back to something I said a minute ago, which is rather than kind of hit them with this big, hey, I know it's been a long time. Let me tell you what I'm up to. You know, can you help me? One approach that I might take is to just try to start some conversation, right? So again, hey, Brian, man, it's been so long. I was just kind of cleaning up some desk drawers, found your card, you know, be honest, found your card. Just thinking about you, wondering how you're doing. You know, how are things on your end? That kind of thing, you know, make it safe for them to respond, right? So if you approach it that way, that doesn't feel like, oh, wait a minute, what does he want? You know, it's like, hey, I was just going through some drawers or some business cards. I saw you say, hey, just made me think, we haven't talked in a while. How are things? So that's what I would do. And then just see where it goes. Now, let me just tell you, a lot of these people are not going to respond. You know, so if you get half of them to respond, I think that's great. And at that point, you know, it will kind of happen naturally where they ask you, what have you been up to? And then you can just tell them. But the other ones, don't worry about following up. Just kind of let it be. You may want to try another time, depending on who it is. Give it a few weeks, give it a couple of months. But then after that, if there's no response, just kind of drop it. You know, we're just trying, the whole idea behind this is to find low-hanging fruit, but you shouldn't force it. Because low-hanging fruit is low-hanging fruit. And if it's not low-hanging, then it's not low-hanging fruit. But anyway, so that's my take on those. Susan, what would you add on the, you know, LinkedIn contacts?
So I would take it if it's, you know, I have stacks of business cards too. I know exactly what you're dealing with there. And I would take them and go to LinkedIn and check first to see, are they still where they were 3 years ago when I met them at that conference, because there's a good possibility they may have changed companies. They may be, who knows? So the value in the cards is if there's a cell phone number, you want to hang on to those cards. So then I would go to LinkedIn. And if I found this person, if they're still at the same place, I would send out an invite, a customized invite that says, hey, Brian, you know, was found your business card recently and realized I never reached out to you here on LinkedIn. Would love to connect and hear how things are going. Done. Now you're creating that more conversational, like, hey, you know, I remember meeting you back at XYZ conference and realized we never connected here. Would love to do that and catch up. If they've changed companies, an even better and even nicer invite, like, hey, geez, I realized we had connected, you know, met at this conference, and I see that you've changed companies. I'd love to connect and hear more about that. So it gives you really nice material for those those really great introduction, you know, invites when you're reaching out to people on LinkedIn. So use LinkedIn because it's incredibly powerful. And depending on your industry, I'm hoping that a lot of these people are there and are somewhat active on LinkedIn. You'd be surprised at how many people are, and they might not be active, but they may have a profile one way or another. So that would be what I would recommend with that first group. Just kind of scope it out, see if you can find them. Where are they? What are they doing? And then follow up either with an invite or, you know, try the email. And if you get email, sometimes if they've moved on, the emails are no longer valid. So that's why LinkedIn's such a great fallback. And I do the same thing with your LinkedIn contacts and pulling out, you might not have a business card for them, but maybe you connected with them in some way. I'd go back and just look through, search and see maybe there's a particular job title that within your contacts. So, you know what, maybe I'm just going to focus on managers. You know, maybe I'm going to focus on creative directors. Maybe I'm going to focus on this type of title and see what comes up. And start doing the same thing is if you're already connected to them, then using Ed's approach is the exact same thing. You can do it on LinkedIn or via email, either way, but just saying, hey, you know, I realized it's been a while since we spoke, wanted to just check in, wondering how you're weathering this storm. You know, everybody's weathering this storm globally. So that's not and it's a fair question. Like, how have you weathered the storm? How's it been going? Would love to catch up. So something like that. So you're using that same approach of just like a softball, hey, just reaching out. But using LinkedIn and as a research tool, if you prefer to use email, that's fine. But it's just a great way to kind of verify the business cards that you have.
It's a great point, Susan, because you're right. I mean, if it's been a few years, there's a very good chance that they've moved on, but they're going to be on LinkedIn. 80-90% of them will be on LinkedIn.
If they have a business card that's a serious business card, they're probably going to be on LinkedIn. That's, you know, as opposed to one that you made up yourself because you're baking pies for a living or something. Nothing wrong with that. But if you're not part of a big company, you might not be on LinkedIn. But if you're a freelancer of some sort, or, you know, you've got your own business and you're doing business with other businesses, like another B2B style business, you're probably going to be on LinkedIn. So good chance. I agree. Probably in the 80-90% of those folks are going to be out there.
You know, I'm looking here at my email because I want to give you a great example of this, like, staying in touch thing. So we all have people I call connectors. We all have connectors in our lives. Connectors are people who know a lot of people. They're very well connected. They're great at introducing you to others. And there is somebody who, I mean, just to kind of give you an idea, in fact, I think I even mentioned it in the training. So this lady is someone who introduced me to my first few copywriting contacts back in 2004. So some of my early clients and some who ended up being with me for years came as a result of her introductions. We haven't been great at staying in touch. I haven't taken ownership of that. But I guess about a couple years ago, I kind of reconnected with her. And I didn't need anything. I just wanted to reconnect. Long story, but we've kind of helped each other out over email. You know, she's had some questions and I've helped her through it. And I just say, hey, let's just jump on the phone and talk through it. So just a couple of weeks ago, I needed some help with some stuff that I'm doing. And, you know, right away, she gave me some great advice. And let me count the number of leads she sent me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All of her they're her clients. So she's willing to make introductions to me or for me to them. Then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 additional ones who are not her clients, but she thought could be great leads for me. I mean, it's too many. It's overwhelming. But just to kind of share, there's no way that would have happened if I hadn't been in touch since 2004. You know, so just it's wonderful. All right, Arfita has a question. What do clients hate the most? Quality. Okay. Quality of work or turnaround times or some other? And do they ever cause legal problems? Do you know of anyone who's had legal trouble? Could you share a contract template that helps with this? Okay. So let me answer the last question first. We actually have I don't want to call them contract templates. We call them fee agreements in session 7. You have access to those. I'm very clear about it there that, hey, look, this is not legal advice. You need to run these through somebody who knows what they're doing. We're just providing them as samples. You're free to use them, modify them however you want, but we're not guaranteeing that, you know, these are going to are legally binding in any way or that they're going to keep you out of trouble. So number one, those are there. Number two, do I know of anyone who has had legal trouble and does it happen? It's pretty rare. It's pretty rare. And that's the fortunate thing for a writer or a copywriter to get sued. Where you're going to see more of it. Let me give you two areas where if it's going to happen, that's when I've heard of it happening before. It's never happened to any one of my coaching clients since, you know, I've been coaching in some way since 2008. Never happened to any one of my clients, but very risky industries such as financial services, healthcare, especially if you're a medical writer and you're writing about, you know, pharmaceuticals and medical procedures and stuff that, you know, has a high degree of liability. However, in those cases, and, you know, clients are going to want you to carry some kind of liability policy. Like those are specialty industries where, you know, they're going to want to cover themselves. Not only do they have protection themselves, but they're going to want you to have it as well. And that's really where I've seen or heard of it happen. In terms of what they clients hate the most, meaning low quality of work or turnaround times. Not sure I understand what you mean, but let me why don't I bring you in, and we can chat because I want to make sure I address it the right way. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Ed.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay.
Hey. So tell me more about that first part.
Yeah, I mean, I really haven't started doing anything, but I was just wondering, you know, what do they get upset about? Like, you know, we talk to them, they want something, we give them drafts, and then what is it like? Too few drafts. What is it like? Or something takes too long.
Well, a big part of it is you kind of said it, which is not doing what you said you're going to do. So If you told them you're going to have a first draft to them on the 25th by end of business that day, and there's no draft, they don't like that. In fact, that is it's a very common thing among creative professionals where they just don't do what they say they're going to do by the date they're going to say they're going to do it. It sounds strange, but you can actually differentiate yourself by being the person who always does what they say they're going to do. Which is amazing, but listen, I hire freelancers all the time and I have in the past. It's shocking to me how few of them take deadlines seriously. So taking deadlines seriously is huge. And obviously quality is going to be important to them too, is, you know, quality writing, a quality draft. They know that it's a first draft. It's not going to be perfect, but they're going to want to see something that was well done. I made a decision many years ago to go ahead and have my first draft proofread by an actual proofreader before I sent it to the client. Now, that's a cost to me, but my philosophy was I would rather charge more and just eat that cost than to cut corners and send something to the client that has errors. It's just, they even know it's a first draft, when they see 2, 3, 4 errors, it makes them wonder how much time you spent on it and how much care you put into it. So I like to spend the extra money, run it through my proofreader. And I know that I may have to do it again once I have all their edits and I've made all the changes, but I'm willing to do that because I'm showing the client that they can rely on me.
Okay. And typically how many drafts do you often share, or, you know, like, is it two, is it four?
Yeah. So my advice there, and I actually have this in the sample fee agreements, so you know, you can see how I word it there. Okay. Is so I'll send you the initial draft and then up to two requests for revisions within scope. So they mm-hmm. have up to two standard revision requests. No more than that. So if we're beyond that, we're out of scope. Sometimes you have to be a little flexible with a client. Like if it's a good client and they have one more and it's really minor, I don't worry about it, you know. But if it starts becoming a pattern, then I let the client know, hey, just a reminder, you know, I include up to two rounds of requested revisions. This is going to be revision number four. You know, I don't mind doing it, but, you know, we need to kind of get back to that. And I need to see what I can do to make sure that, and to help you guys, you know, get the first draft as close as possible to what you want. So I kind of put them on notice that way, but that's pretty standard, two rounds of revisions, and they shouldn't be an overhaul of your content. They should just be basic things.
Okay. And can we do the proofreading ourselves? Like, you know, refer maybe a book or something online, instead of hiring somebody, like, is that okay? Or,
well, look, the technology has gotten pretty good. You know, a lot of people like to use Grammarly these days because it's got built-in AI that it's not bad. But I still believe in hiring a human for it, you know, and somebody else, because it's very difficult to proofread your own stuff. Yes. Even the best writers I know, I mean, who are meticulous, they miss things.
Yeah.
So I think you need a different set of eyes. You have a proofreader. You have someone you run things by, right, Susan?
Absolutely. And sometimes it's a colleague. You know, you don't necessarily, if you're just starting out, maybe you can partner with another writer, or not even someone who's a writer mm-hmm. necessarily, although someone with the background is nice. But, you know, maybe mm-hmm. trade off and say, you know what, I'll proof your stuff if you proof mine. You know, just give it. And I have a couple of people like that are just friends and people that mm-hmm. are I know are good. One is a very avid reader, and she rips my stuff to pieces, and I love it because
right.
You know, I didn't even see that, and she's great. So it's a nice resource. So if you can find just a colleague, that's super. If not, look at some, you know, finding some kind of a resource. I agree. Another human being to actually look at it is great.
And is it grammar or like punctuation or basically the content itself that perhaps doesn't make so much sense, or that normally, you know, upsets people?
For a client, you mean?
Yeah. Like the proofreading part.
Oh, yeah. All of the above. So there's grammar issues, punctuation, clarity, issues of clarity. So awkward sentences, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. It just, you know, again, it's not like it's the end of the world, but it just, clients can lose confidence in you. You know, they may wonder if you just put this together earlier today, you know, and you could have spent hours and hours on it, but they may not know that if they see, you know, if they see a problem. By the way, so in terms of, by the proofreaders are actually very affordable. I've been using proofreadnow.com for years. Very affordable. They turned it around in 24 hours. That's their standard turnaround time. If you need it faster, you can pay more, but mm-hmm. I rarely do. And I've also had good luck with, in the past, finding good proofreaders on Upwork, believe it or not. So, in fact, right now, my team and I have been using someone from Upwork for a few months, 8 months, 6 months, something like that. And she works out great, very affordable. She's even cheaper than Proofread now. We started having quite a bit more volume that we need to proofread. So that's why we looked for another option. But so it's not, and I don't want to make it sound like it's terribly expensive, but Susan has a great point. You know, you might be able to trade off with a colleague, but if that's not a possibility, then just know that there's some very inexpensive options out there.
Right. And so basically what you're saying is that it's not so much the grammar, like all those things are important, but I think what you really want is a fresh pair of eyes to look at it, because which is why I believe you said that you don't proofread your own book, because even if you can, you might not be able to spot the problems.
Correct. It's so easy, you know, and then when they point them out to you, you just feel embarrassed.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'm just a little nervous about everything.
No, and that's perfectly normal. Just know this, the way you bring down that nervousness is by just getting out there and doing it, you know, because actually your nervous level will get even higher. Your anxiety will get higher the more you put it off.
I agree.
You know?
Yep.
So
it's bigger.
it's scary, but listen, we're telling you things that we didn't know. You know I embarrassed myself many times by turning in, again, things that I know I spent a lot of time on, but you know, they weren't proofread. Now, one thing I always did was I took great pride in turning in the draft when I told the client I would turn it in. So I always made good on my promise. That's important, like we talked about.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, thank you, Ed. Thanks, Susan.
You're welcome. All right, Lawrence has a question. What do you recommend with answering ads on LinkedIn or Glassdoor looking for freelance writers? Yeah, let's chat, Lawrence. Let's bring you in. Hey, how are you, Lawrence?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. So these are ads, but they're specifically for freelance roles, not full-time, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So, and Susan, you know, I'd love your take on this too. My biggest thing with that is keep in mind that when they put them out there, they're going to get a significant volume of responses. Okay, so put yourself in their shoes. You know, one ad could get 150 responses, let's say. That's a lot to sort through. The best thing you could do is to only respond to the ones where you can really make a case for you and for why you're the one. So the first thing I would look at is what kind of topics are we talking about? Maybe what industry and what kind of projects they need help with. You know, anything like that, any information like that, that you can gather will help you determine, okay, is this something I could make a good case for? So like in my world, if they would have said, you know, we're looking for a writer who we have a series of white papers and articles we need written, we're a supply chain management software company. And we need someone who just has a basic or, you know, decent knowledge of that industry, and has a track record in writing white papers for a business audience. That I would be all over that because I check all the boxes. But if it was the same, you know, if my expertise, my experience was in, I don't know, medical devices, then I wouldn't go for it, even if I had white paper experience, you know, like so look for the best, the ones where you feel like you're a really good fit and you could easily make a case for it right away. Your resume, so to speak, or your name is going to rise to the top, and then you have a chance. Otherwise, you're not going to have a chance. And if anything, you're just going to annoy the person who's got to sort through all that. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks.
Yeah. You know, the other thing too is, you know, just kind of manage your time, the time and energy you spent on that stuff. Because especially if there's really no talk about, you know, their budgets or anything like that, I wouldn't put all my hopes and dreams and time and energy into something yet. I would only go after the ones where I seem to tick all the boxes and just put it out there and see what comes back. And if, you know, if there's interest, then at that point, that's when I would start digging and asking qualifying questions. And I know you're about to go into session six, you know, we show you exactly what to ask. And, you know, at that point, it's so important to know this, because it's better to know that it's not going to work out early in the process than it is after you spend a couple hours on it.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I think of with this kind of thing, and I know if you've been to the to these calls before, is that I'm into a what I like to call as a marketing mix. So it's part of my mix. Maybe that's part of the thing that I do, is I select a couple of these to apply to, in addition to warm emails and LinkedIn activity and whatever else I have in my mix. So it's more of a prospecting or marketing mix kind of combined, but there's nothing wrong with blending this kind of work in. It's the same thing with agencies. You know, people come onto these calls all the time. Oh, you know, what about agencies? You know, it's a good thing to blend in and see if you can land maybe, you know, some work with an agency. Maybe that's that might be a good fit for you. So it's just another thing to blend in and try. But to Ed's point, putting all your focus into, you know, applying for jobs like this, there's so much competition. And not that there's not a lot of competition for the companies that you might be reaching out to, but you have such a different opportunity to differentiate yourself in a one-to-one, you know, reaching out to someone at a company, and it's more of a one-to-one approach, as opposed to you're throwing your hat into this giant bucket, your resume or whatever you want to call it, into this giant bucket with a 150 others. So, you know, it's a slightly different. So mix it in. I would say just mix it in. And if you want to try that and experiment, try a few, see how it goes. If it works out great, then maybe that continues to be in your mix. But as your business develops, you may not need to do that. So I think it's just a matter of, this is a grand experiment, as I like to say. So you're testing to see what this will result for you, what kind of results you'll get.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Sure.
So I'm on your email list. If I wanted to write to you, I mean, do you respond to those emails?
Well, it depends on what you're asking me. I mean, what do you have in mind?
Oh, I mean, just a question in the future about, you know, implementing something, you know.
It depends. If it's something that I can answer quickly, usually yes, but I have to be careful where I draw the line, because it can quickly turn into coaching. And you can imagine, you know, we're talking about a few dozen people. Actually, since I've been doing this program since 2012, we're talking hundreds. So I have to set a boundary there. If you have something quick, I'd be happy to respond to it. My answer is probably going to be fairly short. I mean, I'm not going to shortchange you or anything. I'm going to, you know, give you, or I can point you also to something, but, you know, I want to make sure I set the right expectation. It's not going to be a back and forth dialogue, you know, like 10 emails kind of thing. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. It's a little disappointing, but yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Well, I mean, we're very clear about, you know, the support in all the program materials. So, I mean, I understand the disappointment, but I want to be, you know, very upfront about the fact that we were very clear in terms of the program is 9 weeks. It was actually ended up being a little bit longer than that, more like 10 weeks. And here's what you get. So, you know, we're not never intended to deceive anyone in any way. And we just have to be careful. I mean, I'm running a business. It may not seem like it, but coaching is like inventory, right? You never run into somebody's store and say, hey, you know, I know I bought some shoes yesterday. Can I have some sandals now? But I don't want to pay for them. And I know it feels like, well, that's totally different, but it can start getting into that, you know? So, you know, I just have to be careful.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. But listen, man, you know, our whole thing is we want you guys to succeed, you know? Absolutely. I'm not going to look at an email and say, no, this is over. But I will find the best way to serve you. Also considering the fact that, you know, we just got to draw the line somewhere. So don't be shy about it. And I'm not trying to discourage you from doing it, but you know, at the same time, the one thing I would encourage everyone to do, go through the whole program, you know, go through the whole program. We created it in a way too, that you, so the summary handout for each module is something that I would encourage everyone to print. When I subscribe and I join programs, that's the first thing I do is, every time I go through something, I go ahead and download the handout, the summary, the whatever, and I print them out and I three hole punch them and I create a binder. These right here are my most recent or current programs. Okay. So the reason they're on my shelf is that's what I'm going through or what I recently enrolled in. They're three whole punch and I go through them. The reason I say that is it's much easier to kind of review and find if I have a question, if I have it printed, or if you have the PDF. I always love on a PC using Control F for find or Command F on a Mac for a keyword. You know, like if I pricing, well, we got a whole module on pricing. So that's not the best example, but I would, you know, so go through the whole program, make sure you have it as a reference, look it up first. And if you don't see it, that's fine. You know, just send me a quick note and let me know and I'll do my best to help you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. We have had, you know, in the past people who, you know, now they're talking to a client and they send us, you know, a really long email with, let me give you all the specifics. You know, what would you do here? And that's a lot. I mean, that's a coaching call, you know, and it's a tough thing because it's not the kind of situation you can easily say, yeah, I would go for it. I would quote $2,000. You know, requires some dialogue. And that's the kind of situation that, you know, we really don't include support for after the program ends. So yeah, I'll encourage you, you know, that's why we're letting you guys know, hey, you got till the end of the month. Make sure to go through everything that you haven't gone through in terms of the lessons and take advantage of us, you know, in the Facebook group. Let us know if you got any questions and, you know, we'll make sure you're all set before the 31st. But you got to take the first step. All right. Arfita has another question here. Do we need to know graphic design and SEO? Do clients expect us to provide images for blog posts, white papers, et cetera? All right. So the short answer is no. You do not need to know graphic design. You do not need to lay out the piece for the client. However, it's a good question because here's what you need to understand. The smaller the company, the smaller the business, the more they're going to want a writer or a copywriter who can give them the whole thing, a turnkey solution. Meaning, hey, we don't know any designers. We don't have a designer in-house. Can you just deliver the whole thing fully designed so we can use it? We got the PDF. It's good to go. The bigger the organization, the more they are set up to handle all those pieces themselves, and all they need from you is just the content. So I would say, you know, like a mom and pop store, a local business is probably going to be more attracted to you giving them the whole thing. You know, so you're going to have to decide, hey, what do I want to do? Do I want to form some partnerships with some, you know, a designer maybe? Do I want to even look at that? Or do I want to just, you know, work with companies and businesses where they already have a relationship or they have somebody in-house and what they really need is the content. So that's the design piece. Now, SEO is a little different. If you were telling clients that you write website copy in, you know, a blog post, you're going to need to know the basics of SEO. Okay. You, these days, you just can't get away without knowing that. I'm not saying you have to be an SEO expert, but you do need to understand how SEO works. And one of your first questions to a client with some, with a project like that is, you know, what keywords are you trying to optimize for? So they're, you know, they want to write this long form article. They want you to write it for their blog post, for their blog, or for their newsletter, or for their website. That would be one of the questions I would ask them. But you can get away with taking either a basic SEO course, or honestly, there's so much free information online. You know, I would look for basics of SEO, copywriting, all kinds of articles there that you can get for free. It's going to take a little bit more, you know, work on your part in terms of elbow grease, finding these things and studying them, but they're out there. And that's one where I would say, you know, you really should know that if you're going to write for the web. Yeah, so let me see. Hey, Arfita, I want to make sure that I know what you're asking about here, the prospective action plan.
Hey, Ed, I think I saw something on your site. It said a prospective action plan. So I figured that that would help us with, I don't know, maybe reaching out to prospects and things like that. But when I clicked on it, it, I don't know, it just took me back to some other page.
Is it the prospecting action plan, maybe?
Yeah, I think that was, it was, I don't know, maybe grayed out.
Okay. Yeah. So let me just tell you, I don't think you're going to need that. What you have in sessions 5, 6, and 7, honestly, is all you need right now. I got some other stuff that gets into more intermediate and advanced prospecting strategies and methods. I'm telling you, this is coming from someone who, you know, makes a living selling this stuff. Don't buy it. Don't buy it. You got what you need. You really do. What getting more is going to do is it's going to create more confusion, you know, and that's only going to lead to inaction. So my recommendation would be to just take what you have here. I really believe that you can get started and get some results with what you have here.
Okay. All right. That sounds great. One other thing, Ed, I think when they give us credit for our work, that's what's called a byline, right? I mean, they put our name on the article, but does that happen often, or does, from what I hear, it may not happen often. They just take the content and publish it wherever, you know, whichever way they want to.
Correct. So the byline meaning it's, you know, this article was written by so-and-so. In most cases, the client is going to want their name on the byline written by so-and-so. So Cindy Smith is going to want to put her name on it. You're essentially a ghostwriter. So you're the one who wrote it, but you wrote it under her name. She's got to approve it. She's got to make any changes she wants. But yeah, it's going to be her name. There might be some opportunities where you could get your name on it, but that's not really the goal. The goal is to land clients who are willing to pay you to write something for them. And whether or not they want to put their name on it or they want to put your name on it, it's inconsequential. You know, it's really about getting paid.
Okay. So basically you're saying it doesn't matter. You don't care so much about it.
No, you know, when it does help is if you want to write for a blog out there, let's say for a blog for your target audience, where people who are your prospects read this blog. Now, you could write, you know, you could pitch them to write some articles for them for exposure. So they're not going to pay you. In most cases, they're not going to pay you. They're going to, in fact, they're going to review them pretty hard. And if they feel this is good enough, then they'll publish it with your name on it. What would be the benefit if you're not getting paid? The benefit would be exposure, because at the end of the article, you're going to want to have a little bit about yourself, you know, your name, what you do, whom you work for, you know, and a link to your website, you know, that kind of thing. So it's, so that can help, but that's really a marketing tactic, not a paying project. You know, it's not an income generating activity.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. So you're saying that you could get credit for it, but in most cases that would be done for free. Like, okay. And the ones that you get might not really, you might not really get credit, but that's something you'll have to live with.
Right.
Yeah, because you're getting paid for it.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Like for instance, I've written a bunch of articles for a client, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 each, somewhere in there. And it was a vice president in this particular company. And, you know, he got all the credit. All the articles said by Mark Sutcliffe, that's his name. And, but I wrote them. But guess what? They were paying me $1,000, $1,500. So they were paying me for doing that work, but then they went ahead and put their name on it. Cause he's the one, they were his ideas, by the way. So he told me what he wanted to write about. They were his ideas and it was basically his information. He just didn't know how to communicate it effectively in an article.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. I was just thinking that doesn't it hurt you with all the research and everything?
Yeah. Now, the other thing too to consider would be, and I wouldn't consider this necessarily right now, but as your business develops, is to look at, depending on the industry that you're in, start looking at industry organizations. This is where you would write an article and not get paid, but you would be the author. You would be listed in the as the byline. And so that might be, maybe it's some kind of a magazine, or maybe it's an association that's within the industry. It's a professional association. Maybe it's, you know, some kind of a group that represents professionals in your industry. And so you get to, you could come in and write an article that does have your name on it. That gives you a lot of credibility. But again, like I said, that's a marketing activity and not a prospecting activity.
Correct. Okay, I see. Name out
there. A marketing activity, not a project. Correct. Or paying. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, one other thing. Thank you for that. If you do research and you find some information on other sites or other sources, you'll definitely put that down and so sort of say that, okay, I found this into brackets or with an asterisk of from so and so. But what if the client doesn't take that, and you know, then it's not your problem, right?
Meaning, if you're doing the research for a piece you're writing for the client.
Yeah, and if you do find some inputs from other sources, so supposing you find an article on some other website or a government site or something, and you give credit to them, but the client somehow massages that and throws out the source information, that's definitely not on you, right?
No. Typically, what I like to do is I like to give, first of all, I will hyperlink in many cases in my Word document to the source. But whether I do that or not, I always include a sheet with all the sources, you know, and like a footnotes or endnotes.
Right.
That way they have that. I also keep a copy of that, obviously, for my records. But I mean, I leave it up to them. At that point, you know, it's out of my control.
Right. Okay. So we do what best we can. But if they do something to the article, then that's on them. Like, there's nothing we can do about it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's why, by the way, you know, you were asking earlier, and we're talking about my fee agreements, my contracts. I have language there that basically says, look, if you change this, you know, I'm not liable. First of all, I'm not liable, period. But if you, you know, if you take this, because this has happened before, I had someone, I sent it to the client, and then one of their senior salespeople changed some of the content. And what they did is they copied and pasted content from a competitor into my article. I don't remember if it was an article or web copy, and they got caught. Okay. So fortunately nothing happened, but you know what they do with something. It's like, you know, you buy food at the supermarket, and then you don't store it properly. And then when you do eat it, you get sick. That's not their fault. What you do once you leave the store is, you know, your problem.
Okay. So I think, Ed, I'm not sure if I heard everything right. So you're saying that somebody else took your article, mixed it up with some other person's write-up, and then they fell in trouble. But did you say that we have to sort of include this in our contract, maybe, that whatever happens next is on you?
I have it in there, just as some language that they have to agree to.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's their problem. They change it. That's not my content. That's their content.
Okay. And is that part of one of the templates you said is in one of the sessions?
Yeah, it's session 7. That's where I have two sample fee agreements.
Okay.
They're basically client contracts that, you know, you can use to review, to model, you know, you can use as you see fit.
Right. And it has this line where it says that
yes.
Once I give you, okay. All right. Thank you for that. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So that's all there. And again, guys, I mean, look, I'm not an attorney. I don't play one on the internet. So you know, just review it, use common sense and run it through somebody who knows what they're doing in that department. You know, that's the key thing. They're there for educational and illustrative purposes only. All right. Any other questions? We got time for another couple of questions. Have you been holding out? Okay. So let me go back to Lawrence or Pitha, and then I'll come back to you. Hey, Lawrence, you're on.
You want to see me?
Oh, hey. For the next 12 days, will you still answer coaching questions? Is that it? Oh, okay. So yeah, Facebook. So the Facebook group.
Okay.
Yeah, we got a Q&A thread there.
Okay. And does that close at the end of the month? What happens with that?
Yeah, so it stays there. What we do is we basically we keep it there as a reference for you guys. Okay. But we're not going to destroy it or delete it.
But it won't be live anymore.
It'll be live. We're just not, I think there's the Q&A thread will be closed. So you can't post new questions.
Okay.
But you should be able to go back in there and search for stuff.
Okay. So you'll answer questions a little bit more detailed than you will after that is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Thanks.
So yeah, take advantage of that for sure.
Okay.
All right. So let me go to Ruth. I'm just trying to take care of people who we haven't gotten to yet. Hey, Ruth.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I came in late. I think, did you have a time change or something?
Yes. Yeah. So we had a time change over the weekend.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That's all right. We just talked badly about you while you weren't here. And
yeah, I'm sure.
So listen, you want to know about, when can you start raising your rates, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The question is like, how can you do that? Like, I have one client that I've been writing for a half a year already, and they have tons of content and they're super happy with what I'm doing. And, but the payment is still, well, you know, not in the long run, it's not enough. So how do I go about, and when would be a good, like, how would I manage that to get my rates up to something where I really think I should be? Because it's still like a rate that is an entry rate, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. So the answer I'm going to give you seems very unscientific, but it's always worked for me, which is next prospect. So first of all, the easiest and best and most effective way to raise your fees is with new prospects. Trying to raise them with existing clients is just hard. It's not that it can't be done, is it? It's harder, and the percentage increase you can get out of an existing client is not going to be that great. So with an existing client, maybe once a year, you could say, hey, listen, my rates starting this summer are going to go up by 10%. And, you know, most clients will be okay with that, you know, but even 10%, you know, that is probably at the top end. With new prospects, they don't know how much you charge. So what I encourage you to do, next new prospect, quote 20% higher than you normally would. So if you charge $1,000 or you have been right now for something, quote $1,200. I think you're going to be surprised at how many yeses you get. I know I've been surprised, and I still do that to this day. Sometimes we kind of get stuck in a certain level. And honestly, the best way is just bump it up by 20% and see what happens. And the neat thing about that approach is that when you do that and they say yes, that becomes your new normal. You know, that's your new baseline. Mm-hmm. And now you're operating at a different level of confidence. So then the next increase, you know, you may want to quote two or three people at that level, but then it's going to become so normal and so average that the next, you know, after that, you can quote another 20% higher, because you're not operating from here, which is where you are now. You're operating from here. So going to this level doesn't feel as bad. So, right. I mean, that's always worked for me. I've been teaching that for a long time, and a lot of people agree it's worked for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, can you sort of, I've been doing some video scripts, or I've started to doing some video scripts, but I have no idea how much to charge for a video script. I've done blog posts and, you know, purely text stuff. But now, they've got me doing some video scripts, like 3 to 5 minutes, videos, promotional videos. It's tons of fun, I have to say. I really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea
What are you charging them for that?
I don't know. I haven't yet. I've just started.
Oh, okay.
And I've done one which I have given in a draft, but we haven't agreed on a price yet.
Okay. Well, that's a different question, right? Because you asked how and when can I start raising my rates? I just gave you permission to do it this afternoon. But then the other question is, okay, I'm doing this. How much should I charge? So that's a different question. What I like to do, what I always suggest, is in session 7, I have a master fee schedule there that you can use as a guide. Okay. Mm-hmm. And use that as just a starting point. I also have 4 other factors that I take into account when pricing something I've never done before. And I did a video on this recently. Let me see if I can find it. But Susan, I'll let you, if you have any other ideas, I'm going to find it. I'm going to put it in the chat area for you guys. And it gives you 5 different things you could do to feel fairly confident about pricing something you've never done before.
Right. The question is also like, what are the factors that go into pricing? Because like video is like totally different than blog, for example, but what are the factors that it can weigh into the price calculation when I present it? Let's say I say, oh, I want 1,500 for this video script. And then say, why do you want so much?
Yeah.
You know?
So I would look at, I've done a little bit of work with video scripts and they're an awful lot of fun. Depends on the, I would break it down, Ruth, by components. So let's say, for example, and I'll just give you the example of the client that I worked with. So I interviewed her first, which took time, and then I transcribed a lot of what she said into the components. So she said, okay, here's what the video is about, and here's what I want to say. And so then I transcribed that information and then gave it back to her. We edited together and produce the final result. So there's a couple of steps. So you might break it down into those steps. Like, okay, so that first piece I'm gonna charge, if it takes us an hour, and then there's the transcription, and then there's the, you know, creating something that, you know, as you write it, it needs to flow. And then also how long, so, you know, you can also think of a factor in how many words does this end up being? So you're using a little of that blog writing thinking of, gosh, you know, if I wrote a 1000 word blog versus, you know, a 500 word blog, there's a difference obviously in what you would charge. So if it's right. 3 to 5 minutes, that can be a lot of content. 3 to 5 minutes of the spoken word is a ton of content, to be perfectly honest. Because, and I found that out, I'm thinking, yeah, 1 or 2 minute, you know, video script, it's a lot of words. You've got a lot of time to fill because you're the only one talking.
And it's harder to than doing a long piece, really, because you have to get the same information into shorter time, so.
Correct. So that's how I approached it, was because I had the same question. Like, I have no idea how to price this, but as I thought about it, it's like, what are the steps we have to go through? And then I started getting my head around, okay, I can see now that this is going to cost them $1,500 because it's a ton of work on my part. I always look at it like, how much time and effort am I going to have to put into it? And what do I think is fair based on that? Because what you want to do is feel comfortable and confident going into that discussion of saying, look, I'm going to charge you $1,500, but I'm going to be transcribing your work, and then I'm going to have to do 1 or 2 rounds of editing and so on and so forth. So you want to kind of have that broken down in your own mind of how many steps it's going to take.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. The other thing, Ruth, let me add one more thing before you ask that. This will become a little bit more, more comfortable to do as you progress and as you grow. It's not just emphasizing, hey, this is what's going to go into it. It's also talking about what they risk if they don't do it right. So talking about, hey, you know, I'm going to make sure that you have a really powerful 3-minute video that's, you know, people aren't going to just abandon after 5 seconds because this seems, you know, they're like, they're lost, or there's an art to doing this well. That's what I will give you. And I like to use examples like, a few months ago, somebody in our neighborhood was asking around about, hey, we're looking to do our, and they have young kids. We don't have our wills or medical directives done. And, you know, we have young kids. We're thinking about going to LegalZoom, but does anyone, you know, think it's worth going to an attorney? And I'm thinking, oh my God, is there anything more important than making sure that you, like, when you die, that, you know, your kids are being taken care of, that if you are in the hospital and you're unresponsive, that people know what your wishes are? I mean, would you want to save a couple hundred dollars by going to a website that does it all for you? You know what I'm saying? So sometimes I like to use maybe not something that dramatic with a client, but I like to help them kind of reframe the way they're thinking about the issue, because I am the equivalent of the attorney. Like, I know what I'm doing and I can help you get it right. And, you know, yeah, there are cheaper ways to do it. Could you pay less? Absolutely. But what are you risking? Anyway, that's more of an advanced thing. You have to have the confidence. And this will come, Ruth, when you've done several of these projects, then you'll be able to say that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does. But you're right. Yeah, you need the confidence and know that, yeah, I really do know how to make a video that people won't abandon after 5 seconds.
That's not going to bore them to death.
Yeah.
By the way, I put a link to that video for everyone's sake, yes, too. I think this will help everybody in the chat, how to price a project you'd never quoted before.
Right. So could I ask another question?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. Like with this client, for example, their work process is very unorganized. You know, we don't have a pricing yet, and they want me to do a video and this on this topic, and they gave me a text and turn it into a video, but there aren't any real guidelines, and then there isn't a real organized review process. It's a startup company that is like not organized in their workflow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that common, and how do I deal with that? Because I've had a lot of meetings with them, which I'm actually not charging, and I haven't really any finished work, which I would charge for. So how do I deal with, how would you deal with something like that to get the process organized so I can be sure that, you know, I'm not just investing here a lot of time and effort, and in the end, because they make changes all the time and they're not organized, it's nothing's coming out of it.
Yeah, so it's a good question. The short answer is that you take the same approach that a kitchen remodeler is going to take. It's interesting mm-hmm. that most people, depending on the situation, have no problem when the vendor takes charge. So basically, I'm asking you to take charge. If you've ever had anything remodeled in your house, like they'll basically say, look, here's how it's going to work. Okay. Mm-hmm. So thank you for your business. I appreciate the deposit check. We're going to come in on this day. Our guys usually get there between 8:30 and 9. Here are the things. Here's a checklist of all the things you needed to have done. Remove from the kitchen so that they won't break. Things that need to be out of the way. Yada, yada, yada. Here's what you can expect on the first day. Here's what to expect on the second day. That kind of thing. And I'm, you know, exaggerating with some of this, but essentially, instead of letting them kind of run the show, you say, okay, I'm the professional here. Here's the way we're going to approach this. And, you know, I'm going to do my part, but when the ball's on your court, then it's you own it. And here's, you know, when you need to get things back to me, if it takes you a lot longer than that, it, you know, I may not be able to jump on it right away. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm dealing with a client right now with that same situation. And, you know, basically I had to take charge and say, okay, well, when are you going to be able to have that to me? Oh, it's, I think by the end of business on Tuesday. Okay. Well, listen, we don't need to have a call this week. Let's just wait until next Wednesday. So that way you get it to me by Tuesday, end of day. And then I would have had time to review it for then. And if, by the way, if that means that I'm going to have to put her off another week because she had promised it to have this stuff done by now, then I'll have to tell her, you know, so it's going to require a little bit more on your part, but I think you'll find that if you want to remain sane, you know, especially with smaller, with startups, smaller companies where they don't have someone who really does a good job kind of being the traffic cop, then you need to take more of that role than you might want to. But if you're okay with that, then you know, I would certainly do it either way.
Yeah. Could there be like something like, okay, deadline for submitting a certain assignment and then a deadline for them approving it. And if they don't, then I charge them because
I wouldn't necessarily like, charge as much as, hey, you know, you're going to, then it's not going to be on time.
Sorry?
I wouldn't necessarily charge them more. I would just say it's not going to be on time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. No, not charge them more, but let's say, okay. I mean, I've had it that an assignment simply died, you know, after I signed in the draft, they never approved it and never did anything with it. And it sort of just evaporated.
Yeah.
So
you still need to get paid for what you've done.
I do, right?
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, I keep coming back to this, but in session 6, the sample fee agreements that I have there, talk about that. So if for some reason the project gets killed, there's a kill fee. And here's what the nature of it will be. And it'll basically be for work done to date. But you can't be expected to cover them.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. That was really, really helpful. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. My pleasure. All right, so I'm going to come back to Arpita. And this will be your last question for today.
Yeah, sure. Hey, I understand. And it's just that today's the last session that we get a chance. Okay. So I just be like, oh, what if I, you know, encounter these problems? So one of the things, you know, how do you balance your job with client calls? I mean, if you have to talk to them, then you have to make time for that. I understand, but hopefully these wouldn't be way too many calls and not long lasting calls, right? I mean, I'm just trying to understand, and do they get upset if they think that you have a job?
Okay, so two different questions. Let me address the last one. Do they get upset? First of all, you don't need to bring up anything about what you've got going on outside of their project. You know, just don't even talk about it. Here's the thing. When you're busy with several clients, you're going to be busy, period. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be busy as if you had a full-time job. So don't worry about that. In terms of how you, this is all about boundaries. So creating and upholding boundaries with clients. What I say to the client, and I have this in my fee agreement, is, you know, I am part of the fee that you, what part of what they're paying for is calls as needed related to this project, directly related to this project. Okay. So we're not going to have a brainstorming call about what else could we do? You know, that's a separate situation. But, and then the other thing too, is if you see, I don't really put a lot of parameters and rules on that. If I start seeing that the client wants to call me all the time, then that's when I may kind of start reining things in a little bit and say, okay, listen, I don't mind talking with you about this project, but you know, I got other clients, I got several other projects and other things going on, is I got to make sure that that we keep our calls to a minimum, or that we anything that could be handled over email, that we could do it that way. You don't run into a lot of that, because here's the thing, like decent clients are busy people. Yes. Okay. And if they have that much time, they're probably not going to be a client you're going to want to work with after this project, you know? So I would be a little bit more assertive with, you know, with my language, and just let them know, hey, we got to start. I can't have, you know, we've had three calls this week and it's Tuesday, you know? So that's too much.
Okay. And are they flexible with the timing and things like that? Because if you do have a job, then maybe you'll have to sneak in sometime, or, you know, they get away from what you're doing and things like that. Like, are they normally flexible?
Yeah, normally. What I like to do, and I mean, this is like the best invention ever, is to have a calendar tool where people can book time with you. So then they get to pick. And that avoids a lot of back and forth. So what I do is I set up a calendar and give them the link, and they let them pick a day and a time that works for them. So you have to do a little bit of setup for that, but that avoids a lot of the back and forth. And if they say, hey, listen, none of these times work, well, then ask them, okay, well, what's a day and time that would work for you? And at that point, you may need to decide, hey, can I do it during my lunch break? You know, I'm assuming you were working full time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But you know, I haven't started doing anything on this front. So I'm not even sure when it'll take off, because I just feel like there is so much more to know. But yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something that you just be careful with, this notion that there's so much more for me to know before I start. You'll never know it. So, you know, and you'll never feel like you're ready. So I guarantee you never feel like you're ready. So I believe that you're better off just starting anyway. Believe me, I was terrified when I started. Terrified. I thought, oh, for sure, they're, you know, I'm not ready. You'd be surprised, you know, and you learn so much as you go.
Yes,
you really do.
Right. Okay.
So don't worry too much about the times.
Yeah, I know. I get worried a lot. Thinking about what if this happens, what if that happens. Ed, I read somewhere that you know, and again, please clarify, because I think you mentioned that this is our last coaching call, but then you guys will be available on Facebook until the end of this month. But I read somewhere that we can maybe join your calls until we get our first assignment or something like that, up until a year or something. I'm just wondering what that is.
Yeah, no. So we used to run the program. There've been several different versions of this program.
Okay.
To run it that way, but we no longer do. So this group was just a 9-week program. And so there's no like an alumni group or anything like that, but we are here through the end of the month. So we encourage you, if you have any questions, please post them in the Facebook group in the Q&A thread before the end of the month. And Susan and I are there every business day answering questions. So take advantage of that.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think we'll do that. Thanks for the clarification. What if a client doesn't pay up? We just invoice them and hope for the best.
Yeah, I will say that clients who don't pay that's not as common as you might think. Most clients pay. They might pay late, but most clients end up paying. What I recommend you do is always ask for a deposit, at least on the first project, of usually 50%, because then you know you have a serious prospect, you know. But then when you invoice, and by the way, and in session 7, I don't know if you've gotten to that yet, I explain exactly how to structure the invoicing. Okay. So you'll get all the details there. But you send out the invoice, and I would definitely follow up if it's overdue. So if you haven't gotten paid and it's come due, I would follow up, you know, in a gentle, professional way, but don't let it go. You know, I would definitely stay on top of them.
Right. And the 15% upfront, that applies to even bigger assignments, white papers, maybe?
Yes. And I like to do it on the first project with a new client. Mm-hmm. After that, I don't ask for a deposit. That's my choice. I just feel like after that, I want to show them that they've earned my trust and that we have a relationship. And I want to make it easier for them to keep giving me additional work. But on a really, really large project, you may want to do something a little different. Like, let's say it's a $30,000 project because it's a bunch of things. And those don't happen that often. But if they do, then you could ask for less, 20 or 30%. Then another 20 or 30%. And this, you know, once you hit this milestone and so on and so forth. So with that one, it's more common to have milestone payments or to have a smaller deposit.
Okay. Got it. And what happened to that client who got in trouble? Ed, you referred to one of your earlier clients who got in trouble because they mixed up people's articles and then they fell in trouble. What happened to them?
You know what? I don't know what ended up happening to them.
right.
I think they fixed it and they handled it internally, but you know, they knew it wasn't my fault.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, please take advantage, guys, of you know, the Facebook group. And if you haven't gone through all the material, this is your chance and as you can tell, we're really encouraging you to go through the sessions that you haven't gone through, especially sessions 6-8, because that it's not as intensely focused on implementation as it is on just learning a process. From then on, you're really dialing it up or down based on, you know, how much you want to do. So make sure to go through that. And if you got any questions, go to the Q&A thread in the Facebook group and ask us. So we're going to close this out, guys, and we're out of time, but I want to make sure that everyone's got a takeaway for today. Okay. Something that, that you feel, hey, you know what, there's several things, but this one kind of stood out. So we'd love to know in the chat area, what was a good takeaway from today's call? Just let us know. It could be anything, just something that kind of stood out for you. And this is a good way for you to just kind of focus on, hey, what's one thing maybe I should, you know, really focus in on. You know, I think a common theme today, Susan, was the being very clear on terms and conditions, right? Sure. Working with a client, letting them know up front. That way you can always point to that if there's problems.
For sure.
Like Ruth said, hey, her takeaway was taking the lead when it comes to the workflow. Yeah. One thing I'll do on complex projects is I'll send the customer or the client a table in Excel or on a Word document, and it'll just all the major milestones when that's due from my end. And then on, you know, their return back to me when that's due to me.
Yeah.
And I get them to agree on that. That way there's problems. I can always say, hey, look how far behind we are. I've made all my deadlines. You know, it's been on your end. Lauren says, you were very helpful answering my questions. Thanks. And answers to Ruth's questions. Good. Also the bit where I'm not responsible for your changes. Yeah. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? They start changing stuff internally. All right. Any other takeaways for today? I got to imagine there's a couple more of you who had something.
Yeah, good call. Lots of great questions today. And I'm glad that people came prepared to, you know, to ask questions. I always encourage every week, every time I'm on and leading, I'm always encouraging people, you know, ask questions, don't hesitate. You know, this is the time to do it. And I'm glad that everybody stepped up today and lots of questions. That's great. That's great. So, and yes, we will both be available in the Facebook group on a daily basis. So don't hesitate. You can still ask questions there.
And you know, as I told Arpitha, look, you will never feel ready. You just won't.
Goodness.
So act, you know, there's a saying, right? Just jump, you'll grow wings on the way down. That's a little dramatic, but it's so true. Focus on baby steps.
Yeah.
Remind yourself that the real learning will happen as you move down this path. And be okay with making mistakes, because you will make mistakes and it's not the end of the world. In fact, look at mistakes as feedback. The biggest mistakes I've made, I'm telling you, as much as I hated it and as embarrassing as it may have been, as much as it cost me at the time, you know what? I learned that lesson and it was deeply engraved.
For sure.
Because it made a big impression. So sometimes the biggest mistakes are the biggest lessons you'll ever learn. So I know it sounds like a cliche, but it's so true. Arpitha says, yeah, thanks for answering my questions. Might have more. Great. Rhonda says, I took away that I'm never going to be ready, that I will make the mistakes and we'll learn from them. There you go. Nadine says, there's gold yet to come. Need to keep pushing forward past module 2. Lots of great questions today. Thanks, everyone. Good stuff. All right. Good. I'll miss the calls too. It's Ruth. I'm glad you came today. Look, guys, you've got this. Don't forget, you have lifetime access to all the material. So don't freak out. You're still going to be able to get that at any time. And just know that we're in the Facebook group till the end of the month. You know, again, if make sure there's something, it's probably in your course materials. But if it's not there, or you know, you want kind of a get our feedback or opinion on a specific situation, or you need clarity on anything, whatever, just go to the Q&A thread in the Facebook group, and we'll respond to you there. So listen, guys, it's been a pleasure. You guys have a wonderful rest of the week, and we'll talk again soon. Bye, Susan. Bye, everybody.
All right. Take care.